This is Paul Davey, Yield Point Specialist for Ag Services in Warren, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Wednesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan. We'll also hear a report from Sierra Doctor as well. We begin with Harvest Hotline. Harvest Hotline brought to you by Ag Country Farm Credit Services, Amity Technology, the North Dakota Mill, and Pivot Bio. East Grand Forks, Minnesota farmer Matthew Kruger wrapped up the soybeans and is moving on to corn harvest.
I'm excited to get into our corn crop, hearing lots of really solid corn yields around the area. Beans were average, maybe slightly below. I think it's the same kind of thing that the planting windows we got later and later kind of really started hurting the yields on both the wheat and the beans. Corn, I'm kind of hoping, I had a couple buddies in different areas that their bean crop is really good and their corn crop's been poor. They're more in the I state. So they're, we're all kind of going for the idea of maybe if beans are poor, corn will be good. So we'll see what happens.
And Kruger says he will take average yields as a win.
And even like the bean yields, I mean, yeah, we hit average, but man, for being planted in June, I mean, I'm going to chalk that up as a win as well. So, I mean, if we can hit corn, same kind of thing. If corn even runs average, I'm going to be happy. Prices are up. Average yield, I mean, I'm going to call that a win. So, but we'll see. So, yeah, no, I'm excited to get out there and see what it is. And looks like the next couple weeks of weather is going to hold pretty decently as well. So that's always a plus versus having to fight mud and rain and the S word that we don't want to say out loud yet.
Sugar beet harvest at Southern Minnesota Beet Sugar Cooperative reached just over 10% remaining to harvest before this week's freeze shutdown. Vice President of Agriculture Todd Giselius says beet growers made good harvest progress.
We're sitting right now about 87% done. It looks like we're going to be about a 26.5 tons and about a 17.5 sugar. So not great tons, but a really good sugar to make up for it.
And Giselius is hopeful to wrap up harvest by the end of next week.
You know, with the cold weather here, we're delaying harvest a little bit, so we probably won't really get going full steam until next week. So we'll see where we're at. Yeah, we had 11 degrees here in our yard and when I drove through in the morning. So it was pretty chilly, but you know, we're probably going to take a few beets just to start processing these frozen beets tomorrow, but just a few, then we're going to wait till Monday to get going.
And the weekly crop progress report from Manitoba Agriculture said total harvest for the province has reached 90% complete. Corn harvest is underway, moisture's ranging from 19 to 26%. Early corn yields being reported from 150 to 200 bushels per acre. Sunflower harvest is 8% complete, with yields reported from 2 to 3,000 pounds per acre. Canola harvest, 92% complete, with yield reports from 20 to 60 bushels per acre. And soybean harvest, 83% complete, with yields reported from 40 to 65 bushels per acre. And that's Harvest Hotline, brought to you by Amity Technologies, the North Dakota Mill, Pivot Bio, and Ag Country Farm Credit Services. National Wheat Foundation released the National State Wheat Yield Contest winners. Wheat Foundation Project Manager Ann Osborne said there were entries from 27 states this year.
In the national, our region did very well. We had 7 winners. So we had 6 from North Dakota and 1 from Minnesota. So the categories that they won in, as you could imagine, was mostly spring wheat. And so we had Matthew Kruger from East Grand Forks, Minnesota, was second in the spring wheat dryland category with 113 bushel. And then John Wirt from New England, North Dakota, was third in spring wheat dryland with 108 bushel.
Spring wheat growers who exceeded their county averages were all from North Dakota.
Jordan Christman from Hettinger, Austin Kautzman, and Greg Nusser, all from western North Dakota. And they exceeded their county average by like 179%. 172% was Austin, and 150% was Greg Nusser.
And a new national record yield was set in the irrigated winter wheat category at 231.37 bushels per acre, that by Riley Reynolds of Twin Falls County, Idaho.
I'm Sierra Doctor on the Red River Farm Network here at the Grand Farm opening groundbreaking ceremony with former Secretary of Agriculture, Ed Schaefer. Ed, tell me a little bit about what's happening today.
Well, this is a groundbreaking for a project called Grand Farm, and it's an all-autonomous farm. Everything is run without people, so to speak, and I mean, I guess you have to gas up the fuel, you know, gas up the vehicles, but it really is a way to demonstrate the future where we're going to be operating farms with machinery that are not driven by human beings. So, you know, the tractors, the carts, the, you know, the harvesting, the seeding, everything is going to be done autonomously. And not only that, but delivered to the elevators autonomously. Every, you know, and we're working toward having a whole farmstead being able to operate, as we call today, on the robotic area or the technology area, will be autonomous, which is pretty exciting because it seems like that's where the future of agriculture is going to be.
Yeah, and I know we were talking a little bit beforehand, but location really seemed to matter. I mean, Grand Farm was kind of debating between Kindred and Castleton, and ultimately they chose Castleton. Talk to me about some of those reasons.
Well, this is really an experimental farm now. It's going to be on the forefront of the future of agriculture, and it's going to be a demonstration place. So there'll be a hospitality center. People will be able to come here and learn about autonomous vehicles, see how they work, watch them, which always gives us some more confidence, you know, when you can see it. But it's going to be also a place for the public to come and not only learn about it, but build confidence in the future of agriculture through technology and autonomy.
And I think it's pretty amazing that North Dakota is at the forefront of a lot of these technological advances.
Well, North Dakota is always at the forefront. You know, when I had the chance to represent the United States of America on a global stage in agriculture, you know, North Dakota was out there in our production methods, in our processes, in our technology of equipment and things. You know, we do that here in North Dakota, and that's exciting in the Red River Valley especially because it really is kind of an epicenter of agriculture development, both in the dirt and in the soil, but also in the machinery and the capacities. So it's pretty exciting.
Well, thanks, Ed. That was Ed Schaefer, former Secretary of Agriculture. Reporting Agriculture's Business, I'm Sierra Doctor on the Red River Farm Network.
You're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Wednesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Coalition of biofuel and agriculture groups is asking Minnesota Governor Tim Walz to help find a regulatory solution that will allow year-round availability of 15% ethanol blended fuel. Minnesota leads the nation in the number of fuel retailers offering higher blends of ethanol, but the EPA needs to make a regulatory change so E15 can be sold during the summer season. The letter was signed by the Minnesota Biofuels Association, Minnesota Farm Bureau, Minnesota Farmers Union, Minnesota Corn Growers Association, POET, and Green Plains Ethanol. South Dakota Senator John Thune and Illinois Senator Dick Durbin are leading a bipartisan group of lawmakers asking the EPA to expand the renewable fuel volume obligations. EPA is going through its rulemaking process for the renewable fuel standard, and the lawmakers are asking for regulatory certainty for biofuels. The letter was also signed by Minnesota Senators Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith. A new study funded by Growth Energy found that nationwide sales or nationwide access to E15 could save drivers billions in annual fuel cost while creating new jobs. Growth Energy CEO Emily Score says E15 has already saved consumers dollars.
Well, this is really about showcasing the cost savings that consumers have when they drive with fuel that is a higher blend of ethanol, like an E15 or a 15% ethanol. We've just got a study that we've come out with that really reinforces E15's ability to offer immediate and meaningful savings. So this summer, consumers saved as much as $1 per gallon in different parts of the country when they filled up with E15. The average across the country was a savings of about 16 cents per gallon. And so when all is said and done, if we as a nation moved to E15 and that was the standard fuel that we were using, consumers would save over $20 billion in annual fuel costs.
Score says the next step is to allow E15 to be allowed year-round in all 50 states.
President Biden directed his EPA to make E15 available year-round. We've got an outdated regulation because right now E15 is not available for every consumer in all 50 states year round. So one of the reasons that we're showcasing the value of E15 and the savings that consumers have on this fuel is to reinforce with the administration the importance of taking further action to make sure that consumers have access to this in all 50 states. Right now, what we're really looking at is these are outdated fuel regulations that go back 30 years, fuel regulations that were made before E15 was even available in the marketplace. So it's really updating the regulations to reflect the fuel choices available today.
The weekly report from the Energy Information Administration for the week that ended October 14th showed ethanol production up 84,000 barrels per day from the previous week to 1.016 million barrels per day. Ethanol stocks statistically unchanged from the previous week, but down just slightly at 21.8 million barrels. Van Onen Company market analyst Jim Emter says the grains are struggling today with finding fresh bullish news, wetter weather, and seasonal selling pressure.
Usually mid-October into December, we tend to fade back on wheat. So seasonally, we see a little sell pressure show up as well. So I just call it the trifecta of where we're at right now. As you look to the corn and bean sectors, too, the low Mississippi River values are a concern on getting bean exports out in a prime opportunity time where we see exports moving. So that's a concern, but we are going to see potentially anywhere from 3/4 to 1.25 inch rains across that whole Mississippi corridor, which again isn't going to change the long-term impact, but may, you know, kind of ease some concerns at least in the near term if we can see those accumulations materialize.
Corn Belt Marketing market analyst Sam Hudson says demand will be the focus of the grain markets. Corn demand is Hudson's primary concern.
You know, our domestic end users are feverishly trying to, you know, scoop up any would-be export demand. And the question is, you know, if South America has a good weather campaign at the front end, do we ever get that export demand back for corn? I think it suffers the most in this. I think beans will be prioritized out of the river and PNW as able. And we can do a lot of catching up there just from a volumetric standpoint. But for corn, you know, if we really get behind the eight ball there, it's tough catching up counter-seasonally.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, you're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Good afternoon. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. The Minnesota Ag and Food Summit will be held Wednesday, November 9th in Minneapolis. AgriGrowth Executive Director Tamara Nelson.
We have our traditional format, so we'll kick off with our economic outlook. We'll have a couple of sessions in the morning, and then we go to our luncheon program with a Distinguished Service Award and State of the State of Ag from the governor. We follow lunch, as per usual, with kind of a political panel that'll look at the election results, and then we have two panels in the afternoon that are going to be more on the future of Minnesota ag production and product.
The AgriGrowth meeting provides a unique networking opportunity for farmers, ag leaders, and lawmakers. Registration can be done online.
Go on our website, AgriGrowth, AgriGrowth.org. We have a nice events tab in the upper right-hand corner. If they click on that, they'll see the second line down is the Ag and Food Summit. And again, we really anticipate, we're getting a lot of early registration, so we're anticipating quite a crowd this year.
For the first 9 months of the year, the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Seaway System moved 690,000 metric tons of grain. That's a 41% increase over last year. Duluth Seaway Port Authority Executive Director Deb DeLuca said July was a turning point for Lake Superior shipping. Checking markets before we leave you this afternoon, we're seeing December wheat in Minneapolis down 3.5 cents at 952.5. December Chicago wheat down 9.25 at 840.25. Kansas City down 4.25 at 940.25. December corn down 3.75 at 677.25. March corn's down 3.5 at 683.5. November soybeans are down 0.25 at 1371.75. March a penny and a quarter higher now, 1391.25. In Winnipeg, November canola, $10.40 a metric ton higher at $870.80 Canadian. December live cattle, $1.60 higher, $151.37. February's up $1.45. November feeder cattle, 65 cents higher, $178.47. January feeders are up $1.12. December lean hogs are 92 cents higher at $87.40. February lean hogs are up $1.20. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Have a great day. This is the Red River Farm Network.